Welcome to the PLL Happy Hour Podcast. I'm Matt Kinnear. Kevin Brown is with me as usual. I am back from a week-long absence, but we brought on a special guest, Dan Arestia, to fill in some knowledge that I won't have and make us all sound better. So, Dan, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. Happy to join you.
And like I said, I was out last week, and at the Inside the Cross Invitational this weekend, a coach who is a friend of mine came up to me and said, "Hey, I listened to the PLL Happy Hour podcast this week, and it was much better than usual." So, What was that?
Only a coincidence.
Yeah, only a coincidence. So he urged me to maybe not come back on, but I'm here. So sorry for watering down the product, but we're ready to rock for this week. And Kevin, are you having a beverage?
We are having a beverage. It is the PLL Happy Hour podcast indeed. So we're going with the old reliable Crispy Boy of the Bud Light variety. Nice little crack open.
I've got something I brought home from the beach. Appalachian Mountain Brewery, Longleaf IPA. So
nice. Sounds delicious.
It's pretty good. It's from North Carolina. So that's right. I should have brought on a Minnesota.
The Appalachians go down to North Carolina? I don't think so.
I'm not a geography guy, so not exactly sure. But
good for you with the IPAs, man. I'm too old. I have one of those. I'll be asleep in half an hour, max.
Well, I will too. That's been my thing this week is, you know, we've had our event, our Inside the Cross Invitational, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and I've been kind of commuting back to it, even though it's a pretty far drive. And my phone has been in this perilous state of always not charged all week because my port doesn't work. So I need to use the wireless charger, but I keep passing out on my couch as soon as I get home and not going like into my bed where my charger is. So it's been ruining my whole week here, but nobody cares about that.
Dan, what are you drinking?
The mountains are blue over here. I got a Coors Light over here on my side table.
Yes, sir. Love it. Nice.
Well, let's jump into it. You know, we were kind of having a discussion beforehand, and, you know, it's pretty surprising, or it's just the thing, you know, you turn the calendar and so much time has passed. We're almost reaching the midway point. The All-Star Game voting is just starting. It's just about to start. And, you know, not this week, but, you know, kind of next week, I think we'll kind of cross that threshold into the second half of the season. Seems crazy. It seems like these rookies are, you know, still, you know, just in college and, you know, not PLL players at this point. But we really have to kind of start looking at who is going to be the last place team in the PLL, because there's definitely a clear top tier of teams, the Whipsnakes, the Atlas, and the Chrome, which might be the biggest surprise of the year so far. Whether you put the Archers in that mix or not is kind of up to you. But then everyone else is in this kind of, I don't want to say race to the bottom, but any of these teams is really in that mix to be the last place team and not make the playoffs here. So let's just kind of dive into it. Dan, what's your take on, I don't say what's the team that's going to finish last, but what is the team that you're most worried about in terms of finishing last?
Yeah, it is crazy how the time goes with the season. The PLL seasons always kind of go like this, where you just blink and you're halfway through it. I know I saw somebody, you know, the PLL plugs their All-Star voting on social media, and somebody replied, you know, like, it's way too early to start this. And I think it was Joe Keegs who was like, the season's half over. Like, do you not realize that yet? You know, so yeah, the time of the season going by is crazy. But, you know, and then, you know, to the kind of the air quotes race to the bottom, you know, it's always kind of like a funny talking point for people being like, the regular season's not that competitive because all you got to do is not finish last to make the playoffs. But, you know, like you're saying, there's really three or four teams that are like in the mix to finish last right now. Obviously, the Chaos are winless, but, you know, they just got their horses back, and they're a few weeks removed from the Whipsnakes needing a buzzer beater to beat them in the season opener. Like, you know, the Whipsnakes are 4-0, the Chaos are 4-0, and they're separated by 3 seconds of game clock, basically. So, or 4-0 and 0-4, excuse me. So, you know, the chaos, just because they're winless and because those guys coming back from the NLL, you know, need at least last week, maybe this week, they'll be done kind of kicking that rust off for the field game. But, you know, I think they've got a good shot to win against the Cannons this week. They're favored against the Cannons this week. So, you know, I think they'll be in the mix. The Redwoods are kind of like, you don't know what you're going to get every week. They got off to such a bad start, but, you know, have been better the last 2 weeks with a good game against the Whips. So, you just look at their team on paper and you're like, there's no way this team finishes last, right? I think in the preseason, the Cannons were a popular pick to maybe finish near the bottom. People didn't look at that roster and maybe love it, even though they have Lyle and even though they have, you know, quality vets. I think people thought they'd be in the mix there. So, you know, for me right now, I think it's weird to expect it to maybe be the chaos, because this is like just such the book for them, like the bad start and then the late charge. And then they're the team you just don't want to see in the playoffs because they've put it all together at the right time. You know, the only year that didn't happen was the first year when they got out to the crazy start and then they lost in the first round of the playoffs. So, you know, you don't think it's going to be them, but, you know, if I had to pick kind of the team that I think might still be there, I think it still might be the Cannons. You know, I've never really loved the Cannons' defense. I know Morocco's great. I think they kind of played defense a little bit this year the way the Chaos have played defense in years past, where it's like, let's play aggressive, let's try and cause some turnovers, and let's let our goalie that we trust like crazy see a ton of shots. You know, so when Morocco's on his game, that strategy is great, because Morocco on a hot day is pretty spectacular. But if you're catching Morocco on a day where, you know, you're getting a spot that he doesn't like to see the ball from, it's a little tougher to try and stay with them. You know, I think Bones Kelly's having a great year, but I'm not sure I totally trust him yet when he gets to a matchup against guys like, you know, like a Baptiste or, you know, Connor Farrell's having a great year. So, I think a lot of their production is still reliant on Lyle, which is fine, but Lyle and then, you know, like a rookie, like you're looking for Lyle and Asher Nolting to do a lot of damage for you. And is that going to carry you into the postseason? I don't know. You know, usually late in the season, the adage is that the young teams play young. You know, the early in the playoffs, the young teams play young. That experience not being there kind of shows up. So, you know, for me, if I had to kind of pick one right now, go ahead and put me on the bulletin board if you want to, Sean Quirk. But I'm picking, I think I'm still taking the Cannons to finish in the bottom. I think the Chaos charge.
Oh, out there. Man.
Yeah, I don't see how anyone could pick the Chaos. Just history. Like, you know, like half the team is coming back, and it's the really good half of the team is coming back. Like, and they haven't been terrible at this point. They've been terrible, you know.
They've been pretty bad.
Earlier in the season, you know, when they won the championship, they were last year. They were god awful at this point in the season.
Matt, you should have seen the fury in head coach Andy Tower's eyes when I asked him. Listen, like you've started bad before, like you started poor the last three seasons and you've come in to make playoff runs. He's like, no, this team's completely different. Sure, we have the same players, but this team is completely different. I'm going to tell you why. And I was like,
well, you don't want to be completely different. What they've been doing is like,
it's the exact same. It's unbelievable.
Let me rephrase the question in a different way. What is the team that you're most unsure whether they're good or bad?
Redwoods, for sure.
I was going to say Cannons, for sure.
Well, Cannons, like Lyle said this post-game, he was like, I can't believe I turned it over five times in the game. Maybe not five times, but he turned it over a couple times in regulation and then had that. He got stripped by Mike Messenger, who scored the game winner, which was just an unbelievable sequence. Shout out Jake Marsh what an unbelievable first game to call as PLL broadcaster. But yeah, I mean, Redwoods, I think, just have such a aura about them. I think it was explained pretty well on last week's podcast. Well, Terry went into how much they relied on Miles Jones to facilitate the offense. And maybe he is playing a little more like he wants to search out for the goals this year, but I haven't really seen that. I've seen more of like their attack not been able to be their man and facilitate and upstart the offense from down low. And when Timmy Trautner is not saving the ball, then they're going to have problems. So it's going to be interesting to see who gets the nod this week in net. But I think head coach Nat St. Laurent left it pretty clear in the press conference. He said, yeah, we're the goalie competition is going to be open. Yeah, we're going to have that discussion, and fans probably should expect Jack Kelly to get the nod.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, the team that I kind of don't trust week to week, I think, is still the Woods. I'm with that, too. Like, you know, how certain are you right now that you're going to see a Woods team that shares the ball versus a team that plays hero ball? Like, I don't know which one of those two is going to show up. Is it going to be the week two Woods or the week four Woods? You know, it's kind of tough to say every week. Their recent track record is way better. I think, you know, they've probably found a little more locker room leadership that I think, you know, the whole world was saying they were missing Harrison like crazy. I think you saw that early in the year. I think a Harrison locker room doesn't have a 3-goal game after a tough, you know, after a tough opening week, you know. But, you know, I think they figured it out a little bit, but I still I don't trust them quite yet week to week. You know, TD hasn't been as good. I know he's missed, I think he's really missed Sexton all year. Sexton's back last week, but he had to go a whole bunch of weeks without really his best wing player. And then, yeah, like Kevin said, like the goalie play has been really pretty poor from Trautner. I was frankly a little surprised. I thought they might go to Kelly maybe at halftime last week or a little bit sooner even, just because Trautner just hasn't been seeing the ball all that well. You know, there's going to be times in the league where your goalie's just not going to be able to save what comes at him. Like, guys shoot really well. The ball moves so fast. You move goalies around like crazy. It's tough. But he had a few last week where it was like that at this level, that has to be a save. And if it's not, then we got to look somewhere else.
But you brought up a good point that it's like out of those three teams, Cannons, Chaos, Redwoods, like they're on the most upward. I wouldn't say the most, but like, from week to week, you can see their trajectory improving the most in terms of, that first week was bad, 3-goal game, you hinted at, and then last week was their best game of the season. So, I mean, we'll see. They got the Archers. I mean, that's a tough game, right?
Yeah, but, you know, maybe that's the get-right game for TD. You know, Inacio missed a bunch of weeks because he couldn't because of the visa stuff, and he's still acclimating, I think, to PLL rules. I think he's a PLL level faceoff guy. I think he's still just kind of getting comfortable. So obviously Baptiste took it to him last week, but you know, if he's still adjusting, he's not comfortable yet. Maybe it's a chance for TD to start getting a rhythm, feel better about himself. But
yeah, tough to go from Baptiste to a hungry TD looking to make his mark on the season here.
And then you got to figure it out in net, man, because the Archers are going to shoot, and they're going to shoot well, and they can shoot from everywhere. So you got to have that goalie situation ready. I don't know, whoever it is in the start, I think you got to be ready with a short leash if they can't save anything early.
See, I think Redwoods, you know, to go back to the original question that we started this with, the Redwoods are my team that I'm most concerned about finishing last place, because there's just something about when a team is supposed to be good and they're not that seems harder to overcome than when a team like the Cannons was, like, not a lot of people were really high on them to begin with anyway, and they're kind of doing what they're supposed to do, and maybe to some extent a little better than they're supposed to.
That blown lead was bad. It was tough to watch.
Yeah.
They just let Tarasenko and Jesse Bernhard and all these midfielders just waltz on in there and transition.
And even though the Redwoods looked better and have looked progressively better, you know, since they kind of had that, like, week one bad, week two really, really bad, I don't, the problems just seem deeper than just talent. They just seem like there's just something that's not yet, that just needs a little more, a deeper change than just, you know, an adjustment or something like that. There's just something more going on there. Whereas, I don't know, I maybe it's just the Lyle factor and I'm just wowed by him still, like every day, but I refuse to pick the team with the best player in the world as the team that's going to finish last place in the league.
Well, sidebar, because we had Asher on a few weeks ago, just like refuting how I ranked him prospect wise, but like, to be honest, like the jump from being a ball carrying quarterback to an off ball, I'll catch it when Lyle's triple teamed is, I think, a lot easier of a transition to make when you have to like maybe carry the ball a lot. So that's on me for not recognizing that. And I think the game that they played together was awesome and at Homewood. But yeah, no, that was tough to watch them lose that lead. And but where I was going with that was going into the Archers Redwoods game. They're two of the most complete rosters dating back from the start of the PLL. You go back to complete defense, complete offense, fun to watch. Maybe not so much this season, but I think it'll be a great game to kick off 4th of July weekend here.
For sure. And, you know, one thing is none of us have mentioned the Water Dogs as, like, you know, in either of these kind of hypothetical questions that we've been asking. And I think that kind of speaks to them as, like, this, like, mysterious middle of the road team that they're not bad, but they're not really good enough to feel like they're any sort of threat to anything. They just kind of exist in the world. I don't know. Is that a harsh thing to say, or is that like kind of spot on to say about that?
Well, I think, you know, I kind of asked Coach Koblet about it last week, but you know, they still haven't played a game with their full roster healthy. That hasn't happened yet. You know, it's probably true for a bunch of teams in the league, but you know, the Water Dogs haven't had Dylan Ward yet. I think if Jake Withers doesn't get injured in the Whipsnakes game, they win. They were up 8-3 in the third quarter of that game, and they had Zach Currier basically unable to do anything other than take faceoffs. So no wing play from him, no two-way midfield really from him. That means the pole gets to go guard Kelly or somebody else instead. You know, the Withers injuries and the moving of Currier to faceoff in that game completely threw it off kilter. But, you know, I think, again, that's a win over maybe the best team in the league for the Water Dogs. But, you know, I think they're a really good roster if they ever get everybody healthy. I don't know if we're going to see DNAP this year. You know, he started the season as like questionable, and then he's been just straight up out since then. So I don't know when he's coming back, if he's coming back. And now Withers to IR is obviously challenging. You know, the Tucci pickup for them has been huge.
He's been awesome.
Because yeah, he's been so solid. You know, he's been at whatever, I think he's dead even at 50% to this point, which from a player pool guy in the PLL, if you get somebody from the player pool who can go 50% based on off for you, you hit a home run. You know, I know he went like 47% against Farrell. So
yeah, there's adjusting from college to PLL. That's tough the first few weeks just with the whistle. And I remember, you know, Adler from MLL to PLL, just the whistle cadence and you know, just the mechanics of it, it's a tough adjustment just to like pick it up right away. So that's like a super admirable, like to be 50% is like you're hitting gold there.
Well, I almost wonder if he's one of those guys where like, it's the clamp down, the rules that were changed a couple of years ago from the college game, and he's just transitioning better to the pro game suits him.
I think he's a good match for Withers because he's like, he's super athletic. And if you need somebody who can do kind of what Withers does, which is like, look, I'm not going to win many of these clamps. It's not why I'm out here, but I'm going to out athlete like everybody else on the field right now for this ground ball. I'm going to make it a fight. And I bet my wing guys of Ryland Weiss and Zach Currier are better than yours. So, you know, like Tucci can do that. I think I was looking at his stats the other day. I think he's won through his two games. I think he's won 25% of the clamps of the faceoffs he's been out there for. He's not getting these clamps very often. If he wins them, he's up at like 90% or something. Like if he wins the clamp, he gets the ball, but he does not win the clamp very often. So, you know, I think because he's so athletic, he fits in nicely with the way the Water Dogs kind of approach faceoffs anyway. Withers is never a really high percentage win the clamp guy, but he's just like freakishly athletic and a monster on ground ball. So you grab Tucci because he's a good comp for that.
No, for sure. And they're playing the Whipstakes again, which sets up a rematch from a couple weeks ago. They're maybe a little angry that, you know, Withers went down, Xavier went down in that game, looking out for revenge after a blown lead in that one. They lost in overtime. It's going to be an exciting game. Did they lose in overtime?
They did lose that game in overtime.
Yeah. So long ago. I'm excited for that one. The late start times, 9:45 on Friday night, 8:45 on Saturday night, are going to be fun for me to stay up for.
I love it. I think I said this a few weeks ago, but
PLL after dark.
Yeah. So much the midday Saturday games. I just don't know who just has nothing else to do Saturday middle of the day to watch a pro lacrosse game on TV. Like, I just don't understand who that person is that they're reaching out to. I get it. TV windows are scarce, but
They haven't had too many of those.
No, it was just that one week, really, that yeah. I think it was one that they had that. But yeah, I'm all about, I mean, hell, start at 10 o'clock at night. I would be much more appreciative of that than a 1 o'clock on a Saturday start, for sure.
Yeah, I usually catch up on those Saturday afternoon ones. If it's like Friday, Saturday weekend, like Sunday night, I'll watch the afternoon ones that I couldn't see because the kids were going nuts or something.
Yeah, that's the best schedule ever was when, you know, MLL and PLL were both in the bubble and you had all the nighttime, you know, midweek games and you just like
11 p.m. start.
Yeah, that was awesome. Those are the glory days of pro lacrosse, that glorious 3 weeks of...
You're right, 3 weeks.
Bubble across.
Well, Dan, you had a special cookout for what was your kid's birthday this past weekend. Are you having a another barbecue for 4th of July weekend?
No. Yeah, kid's birthday last weekend, so we had party on Saturday, party on Sunday. Just way too much, right? For me. Yeah, I have twins. Yeah.
Twin gang.
Yeah. So Nothing big this weekend. We're going to do barbecue on Sunday, but obviously that doesn't interfere with our Friday, Saturday lacrosse. I think the weather Saturday is supposed to suck anyway, so I'm sure we'll be able to be indoors and maybe catch a little bit of those afternoon starts and everything. But yeah, I'm looking forward to this weekend's games.
I am very impressed by your, you know, obviously I haven't tasted them, but your pictures of your food.
I haven't posted any food in a while. Yeah, I mean,
I thought you posted your spread at your barbecue, right?
I posted the barbecue spread, yeah, with the watermelon frog. That was a big hit.
Well, so you made a presentation.
yeah. I mean, we had like 15 people over, so I had to do quite the big spread. But yeah, I love cooking, man. Love cooking.
Very nice. Well, one thing I was just thinking of, so. Another question I want to pose, and again, we haven't, for all the listeners, we literally have not gone over any of this. I'm just thinking of questions as I go along here. Who is the most surprising player at this quasi-midway point of the season?
I think it's, there's kind of like a scenario that was a domino effect of shock, right? It's draft night. First overall pick is happening. And they say Logan Wisnowskis, and the whole Twitterverse of lacrosse Twitter is like, what are you doing? How do you not take Chris Gray? This is insane. And of course it's like, it's pseudo. We all should have saw this coming. I had said, like, if you were to rank coaches all time with the criteria of does not care at all about what the narrative is, pseudo is number one. He takes the guy that's going to fit his locker room, his chemistry, knows what he does. So he shocks us all when he takes Wisnowskis. And then I don't know if this is just 4D chess and he really thought he would fall to him, but getting Nick Turn at the top of the second round, and for me right now, Nick Turn is like running away rookie of the year. Nick Turn has been freakishly good. He's leading the league in assists. I think he's like top two or three in points. I don't think anybody expected him to kind of be what he is, and in the role he's playing. A lot of like the pre-draft kind of pub about Nick Turn was like, okay, maybe he should maybe run out of the box for them, and he can, you know, attack shorties out of an invert.
As much as it was just like, he's got this Army commitment maybe can't take a first round selection on him. I think we all knew like he's this good at that.
I don't think anybody thought he was going to be able to be a X attackman that was going to be cooking PLL poles in year one. I think a lot of people thought that this was going to be a team with, you know, with Dylan Malloy still playing attack. Maybe they thought Randy Stotts would be there. Maybe they really liked, you know, Jackson Morrill led the Chrome in points last year playing at X. Maybe they thought he could keep doing it. You know, I don't know if anybody just kind of assumed Nick Turner would come in and grab that job. But man, has he kind of taken hold of that. He's been, I think, to me, the biggest. I think everybody knew he was going to be good. I don't think anybody thought he was going to be a top 2 or 3 points in the league guy and lead the league in assists through a month kind of guy.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Like, I hear what you're saying, Kevin. I do think the narrative around him, like, no one was like, don't draft him because he's not a good enough player, for right. sure. People, you know, what's the value in a guy who's only going to have a few years is certainly a question. But I don't think anyone, like, I mean, he's a potential MVP in the league in his rookie year. Like, he's playing that well right now.
I don't think Tim Sudan recognized that either. I think to Dan's point, he was pretty adamant that he had an ex-attackman in Jackson Morrill. And that's why he was so convinced that Logan Wisnowskis was the right pick at number one to fill that lefty attackman need. He was also the best player on a historically great championship winning squad. So it turned out to be a good pick. So, it's pretty impressive.
I'll give you another guy I think who's been surprising is I think Tommy Kelly. I think TK's had a really nice resurgence this year. You know, I think he was in the player pool all of last year. And then, you know, the Chaos need a guy because they're not going to have Adler the first few weeks. And, you know, they might have thought they needed a little more face-off help anyway, so they grabbed TK. I think TK right now, the last time I looked at the stats, he was winning the clamp at the highest rate in the league. He's top face-off or the top clamp percentage in the league. And you know, I think you heard Towers say last week that even though Adler's been hurt and is on the pup list, he's not feeling like he's in any rush to get Adler back because TK's been so solid. So I think he's been a nice surprise, even though, you know, I don't know, Chaos are winless, but I think the level of play from Kelly has been really good. I think he's been a bit of a surprise. You know, I think maybe they thought they'd be bouncing through guys or something to make it through these weeks till Adler got back, but to find a guy, you know, TK's obviously been that good in the past, but to find him out of the player pool and be like, all right, we just got our guy every week. We've talked about how kind of rare that is in the PLL.
Guy, I don't know if surprise is the right word, but just so impressed by, I guess, would be Eli Salama right now. You know, maybe I'm just doing my wearing my D3 podcast hat and just kind of giving some love to the RIT guy. But, you know, he's an essential player in the league right now at this point. And, you know, I don't think if you would have looked at a roster at the beginning of the year, you would have said that. And, you know, he's definitely a guy that I think a lot of people knew he was really good, but he's definitely proving everyone in that D3 world right now.
Well, they drafted McNulty at LSM mm-hmm. before he was in the third round? And they got another contributor in the fourth who is slipping my mind. Dan, do you know who I'm talking about?
They drafted McElroy, but he hasn't
right, played McElroy yet. Hasn't contributed either. But yeah, I mean, Salama and Grill up top has been a great duo. Like Grill, more of the defensive, not transition guy, and then Salama, he's more of the offensive, got a great stick.
And in terms of a surprise, like with that team retiring so much leadership, I think like it was certainly the the talent that they have is very good, and I just didn't realize that the leadership void would be filled so well and so quickly, and everything would gel so well. That you know, that's certainly my team surprise of the year. I think that goes back to guys like Nick Turner and Wisnowskis, and just that like they have always been just unselfish guys who put up a shit ton of points, but don't act like it.
Yeah, and they still have Manley and Bernhardt too, which is about as solid as a crew of veteran leadership as you're going to get. Manley's playing like a depoy. So is JT Giles Harris. Like, and then last week you saw that the PLL put it on social. Bernhardt in the locker room, like getting his guys together.
Yeah.
I think he's still you have that. It's from a new place without Galloway there and Joel White and stuff, but. I think that defensive leadership is definitely still part of their success.
It is annoying that Chrome doesn't play Whipsnakes until week 7 in Dallas. I wish they were playing this week. It's kind of early for another repeat of a game that's already happening, Whipsnakes water.
I'm not sure how that worked out that way, but yeah.
I mean, we'll take it. We'll take storylines with Water Dogs exacting revenge, or at least attempting to, but I want to see the top two dogs. At least we kind of hinted at this, that we're about to talk about tiers in the top of the show. I think Chrome and Whipsnakes, the two 4-0 teams, have set themselves apart. And, Atlas were in that tier for the first 2 weeks and kind of trailed off with trying to tinker with some offensive personnel. And, Jeff Teat wasn't as assertive on the island up in Hempstead, so we saw him break out the one-hander, and he's just so casual. And when Baptiste is tilting the field as much as he is, it's a dangerous team to watch. So
The funny thing to me about the Whips is, and I don't think there's anybody out there who's going to try, I think you can make a case that the Chrome could be number one. If you want to do like 1 and 1A between Chrome and Whips, cool. The Whipsnakes are, they have a 1-goal win over an 0-4 Chaos team. They have an OT win over a 1-3 Water Dogs team. They got a 1-goal win that was almost an OT game against the Redwoods. The only team that they really looked dominant against was like the Atlas, who were the class of the league at the time. So it's kind of the Whipsnakes are this, like, they just win these games. Like, I don't know if they're playing to the level of the opponent or whatever you want to call it, but they, against the three teams that you'd think, if you're the best team in the league, you would probably beat up on a little bit, they were biting their nails against. And then they play the team that everybody had as like the title favorite, and they won by 3 goals, but it looked more comfortable than 3 goals. I think they're kind of they're still kind of an enigma a little bit. I still think they're, a top two or three team. Probably, I think I still rank them number one this week, but at worst they're a top two or three team. But it's interesting that like the wins they have are over like the bottom of the league by 1 goal every time they go out there, with the exception of the time they smack the Atlas.
Oh, you can tell Stagnita is just heated about it too. Like, he has had enough of these
games. That's why they're so good. Is like, they are just, and PLL put out some sort of tweet about like tough love from Jim Stagnita or something like that. And like, yeah, there's like they're the only team that has a standard of excellence in the PLL so far. I mean, it's such a young league that it's like tough to make that statement about any team, but they're the only team that has this like consistently, like,
but it also helps that
team more.
Right. No,
and they do it.
Yeah. And it also helps to have like the lighthearted presence of a Matt Rambo. Like, I was telling you about this, Matt, but like, Dan, did you see like the post game interview on ESPN? Like, Matt giving the little wry smile, like, yeah, coach yelled at us a little bit. We had to pick it up. Like, yeah. I mean, it helps to have that kind of presence in the locker room. Just like, all right, when you do get yelled at, have like your best player there to, make light of it and get back out there and do your job.
And that's like, it's why Maryland won a national championship when they did, is because Tillman's a guy who demands a lot of his players. He's hard on his players. He's obviously still, his players respect him and would do anything for him, but he's hard, and it's hard to be a Maryland lacrosse player. But they won because Matt Rambo was there to like bring the other side of the coin and, bring some yin to the yang. And, they played Dire Straits, was the song that they played in the bus on the way there. Like, just goofy stuff like that they did, that like, that's why you win, is because like you have someone who brings you up and brings you down at the same time.
Yeah, whatever the blend is, whatever the mix is of chemicals and personalities and whatever else that you need to have in a locker room to be successful, they've just got it right. You know, I think I have this right, where after last week now, I think all time in since PLL inception, I think the Whips are now 12-2 in one goal games. Like they've you just can't let it be close. They always find a way to win those games. They don't lose one goal games.
Especially against the Woods.
Yeah. And also, like, and that I've Matt Rambo's, maybe it's my Terrapin bias being a Maryland graduate, but like Matt Rambo, as much as like we're like saying, oh, he's like this goofy, lighthearted guy, when it comes to crunch time, like that dude does not mess around whatsoever. So like he is the, like, if there's a guy with, I said that Lyle is the best player in the world, but I don't know if it's 30 seconds and I'm getting the ball in one guy's stick to win a game, it might be Matt Rambo.
Yeah, I mean, and it's easy to say after Lyle got stripped this past weekend when the game was online, but I think it was also interesting to see the transition out of that prompt, but, you know, I picked Mike Earhart as my LSM of the week for the team of the week selection again, and you know, I was going back and forth between him and Craig Chick because of how well he played Schreiber. And he had, what, like three calls turnovers, four grab balls. And he was a menace out there. And it almost seemed like Schreiber was deferring a little bit too much. He had a nice lefty sweep to the middle that he scored easily on late. That you're like, why don't you just do that every time? And then you realize, well, you don't get freed up on screen that easily every time, and maybe there's a little miscommunication or whatnot. But
well, there's a difference there. Like, I think I get what you're getting at. Like, if you're building a team from scratch, Schreiber is one of the like first two guys you pick. But if you're getting a ball and someone's stick to win a game, he's not one of the first two guys you pick, for sure. He makes everyone else around him better. And Rambo does that too. Every great player does. But Rambo wins you games with his just brute Rambo-ness.
Which might be the biggest argument why they need Grant back. You know, like they're not really worried at 2-2.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know they have the reigning attackman of the year nursing his hamstring and getting back to full health, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest... It's certainly the biggest storyline of the year in terms of injury and personnel news. It's, you know, hamstrings are not something that, like, you know, that's something that can linger for a long time. You know, I don't know. I'm just going to make that clear. I don't know his status in terms of, like, you know, is it going to be a long-term thing or a shorter term thing?
He doesn't either. Like, the team was, like, announcing that he was ready to play, and then, you know, he tested it out in warm-ups, and he wasn't. So, it's...
But that's the thing that, yeah, like, I worry about with a hamstring is, like, is it that constant ebb and flow of the, like, I think I'm good, but maybe I'm not, and then it goes back another 3 weeks, and then next thing you know, like we said, we talked... kick this off about how short the season is and how much time passes. Like, he doesn't come back soon, it's going to be week 10 and we're looking at the playoffs.
Right, it's like Michael Sowers from a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Which just reminds me of when Grant got hurt in college. He was in a boot, and you know, he had his I think it was broken. It was a foot injury. I don't remember if it was a broken foot or some sort of tendon tear or anything. But Jeff Tamburini, like every week to week, we asked him consistently, like, what's the status of Grant Amet? And he said week to week every time. And like everyone was like, dude, he's in a boot. Just say that he's not going to play. Like, you don't need to keep this like mystique going around, like whether Grant is going to play. Like, John Tillman is not preparing for Grant Amet because you said that in a press conference. Like, just say he's out for the year. We can move on from this.
Right. Yeah, it's unfortunate that we haven't seen Grant yet. I think, you know, we've talked a little bit about surprising players. I don't know if he's surprising, but I think the Archers have been loving Matt more in the absence of Grant and Matt because, you know, Matt is giving you exactly, I think, what you expected when you draft him, which is the guy who can do anything, who can play from anywhere, who can win a matchup, who can shoot from anywhere, he can feed. Him and Gray were the two most malleable players in that draft, I think, in that it was like, listen, put them anywhere with stick in either hand and ask them to feed, dodge, pick, you know, free somebody up inside, whatever. They're going to do it at a pro level. And I think you've seen that already with Matt Moore. It's been, you know, you see him sometimes these times he's coming out of the box and the dodge downhill against a short stick. And what makes it really good is how good Manny and has been and how good Holman have been too. You saw it last week where he's coming out of the box once and you see a cut from Marcus Holman that is like so hard and so precise to a spot where you have to absolutely respect it. And it moves a defender just enough to give Moore like almost half the field to dodge into, like a ridiculous amount of space. The way these guys are freeing up space for each other, particularly Moore as a dodger out of the box, is so pretty to watch when the Archers offense is humming well. But he's been a beneficiary of that. I think he's been real fun. I've really enjoyed Matt Moore's season so far.
Yeah.
The thing with that too, sorry to cut you off, Matt. Just like I thought after watching, so Trey Leclerc had one really good dodge this season that I'd noticed, and it was a ready wing dodge. He rolled around and shot with his right hand, improved his angle, and got it to go low. Like, him and Moore should be complimenting each other more, I think, than I think that is happening. But, like, if you have Leclerc picking and popping to float around the two-point arc and Moore and Schreiber finding him, then he's going to be a threat as an outside shooter, but he can also dodge off two passes, you know? Like, it's interesting to see their dynamic with the midfield, but they're determined to go with Ryan Ambler, and that's not saying, like, Ryan Ambler's bad or anything. He knows his role, and he's going to go downhill and pass it, or if he gets the slide or shoot it if he doesn't. And Moore talked about that post game, which was interesting to me to kind of see their singular focus as a midfield.
Are you going with the over under on 3.5 points for Matt Moore? That's the betting line this week.
I'll go.
Were they playing in the woods?
Yep.
Yep.
We'll go over. I will say,
one two-pointer brings me a lot of comfortability with that pick. And I'd say this is the week he realizes he's got the range.
I will say over because he takes enough shots and he's going to be taking them on an ice-cold goalie. And, you know, the Archers shoot so well. He's such a critical part of their offense. There's still no Amit, like we said. So, you know, he's going to have his opportunities. I would say he goes over on 3.5. I would like him against, you know, I think Jack Neer's out, right? Jack Neer's out hurt too. So there's, you know, how, maybe that's a fun question. Do you pull Matt Moore now?
I mean, who do you not
pull? The disrespect. The Schreiber.
Who are you not pulling? No, you could pull two guys. Do you short Manny?
That's true. Short Manny.
Would you short Manny and try and make Manny a Dodger so you can pull, I guess, Holman, Schreiber, Moore? I guess you could probably pull Manny too and leave and short, you know, Leclerc and Ambler, something like that.
I mean, Leclerc and Ambler, like, that seems like your best duo to short.
I think we've reached a point where we've reached a point now where Matt Moore has earned a pull 4 weeks into his rookie season. But I think you need to think about trying to figure out matchups where you can get a pull on him. I think he's beating short sticks too well. I think he's doing it against quality shorties too. He absolutely like just slaughtered the short sticks in the chaos matchup. Like they just could not handle him.
Yeah, I mean, you almost got to figure out something in like the sub game. to get the pull on him as soon as he's getting out of the box.
Yeah, but you know, Rubio mentioned it. They sub so well. They're going to sub Schreiber onto the field first, right? If you want a shorty on Moore, sub Schreiber on first so the pole finds him, and then Schreiber just runs away and takes the pole with him, and then you sub Moore on afterwards and be like, all right, get a pole to him if you want to, but don't screw it up, because if you do, Will Manny's over there, or whoever else is over there, and everybody can shoot. So, you know, I think
5 yards he gets out of the box, that just kill you.
Yeah, you got to make sure the subbing has to be perfect if you're trying to two pole the midfield like the Archers. But I think you need to find a way to pull more soon. I think he's just been too dangerous against shorties.
Well, that is the first game of the weekend. It is Archers versus Redwoods. That's Friday at 7 p.m. That's going to be on all the games this weekend are on ESPN Plus from just outside Minneapolis, Eagan, Minnesota, that these games are going to be played. So let's just roll into predictions, and we'll wrap this thing up. So let's go. Let's pull up the betting lines for this week.
Give it to us.
I got a feeling we're all going to be kind of on the same page.
Dan, is your picks wise?
My picks wise stuff is up. It's up today. I did a. We'll pull the curtain back here. I basically get assigned a game every week, and then I get to pick my player props every week. So the game I got assigned is not necessarily a game I would bet, but I do feel good about my I got assigned Chaos Cannons, and I was like, man, it's tough to try figure out what to do with a Chaos line right now. So,
well, the spread and over-under are basically the same for every game.
Yeah, that's how it is most weeks.
Yeah, that's basically the what we're going with. Usually, you sometimes get a 2.5, but these are all 1.5 point spreads. You know, the Archers are favored. It's a 24.5 over under. So, I mean, I have no doubt the Archers are going to beat the spread. I don't think that's even a question, to be quite honest. To me, it's the over under. And I'm gonna go the under, just because I don't know how much the Woods are gonna put up in this game.
I will take the Woods. I will take the Woods plus 1.5. I think. I mean, again, like the Whips played them to a 1-goal game last week. I think the Woods are putting it together. I'm on the Woods are back train. So I think we have a get right game for TD. Like I was saying before, I think he has, you know, he goes north. I'll say he goes north of 60%, approaching 70, and they get plenty of possession. And I think they get some opportunities. I think the thing that scares you, of course, is that Neer is out and that Hartzell is out, I think, too. So they'll be going, you know, how they decide to play with their poles, if they use Kennedy or, you know, or what they do there will be something to watch. And, you know, that's, we were just talking about how crazy the Archers midfield is. That's going to be a tough assignment for Kennedy as a rookie. If that's the guy who gets the nod, but I will take the Woods plus the 1.5, and I will also go under on the 23.5.
I'm going to go over because I like, for the reasons Dan stated, I think the Redwoods are figuring it out, especially offensively. They're picking out matchups they like. Perkovic was the guy who had a little bit of a hot hand against the Whip Snakes in terms of going against Brendan Kamish at times and down the alley, or whether you're at time and room with a nice bounce shot. And I think Archers put up a bunch of goals that I think they cover. So that's what I'm going with.
So the other one is, lost my window here. Atlas Chrome. 1.5. Atlas are favored in this one. Interesting. But
interesting.
Interesting by standings, but also I'm kind of like, I'm still taking the Atlas, I think.
Right, because Chrome, they had to come back in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
The Chrome back team.
Chrome back. I mean, Trevor Baptiste is my deciding factor.
Taking the Atlas. My factor. He's taking it to Connor Farrell in the past, so.
Yeah. 23.5. I'll go the over on that. I don't really have a good logical reason. But I just feel like these teams are clicking, and that tends to favor the offense, I feel like, in terms of, like, I just think the offense is going to be executing at a high level and over, but Atlas mostly because of the Trevor Baptiste factor.
I think I'm on the Chrome. I think Baptiste, obviously, you know, I was going to ask you guys who's your MVP medal stand right now, because I think Trevor Baptiste is on top of mine. I think he's been, like, you look at what Beast did in 2015, and I think Trevor's outplaying that right now. And Beast won an MVP that year. So I think Baptiste is certainly a factor, but I think I'm on the Chrome. I think Farrell's having such a good year, too. I know he hasn't had a ton of success against Baptiste in the past, but I think he's been playing really well. The problem with him has always been, I think, his handling of the ball after he wins faceoffs, I think, is where people usually kind of knock Farrell a little bit. But I think that's even been a little bit better this year. He's still, you know, making some mistakes, but not as many as maybe we've seen in the past. I really like the Chrome's attack matched up with the Atlas defense. And I think, you know, I like the way the Chrome defense is going to match up with the Atlas as well. The scary thing here is that the Atlas is, like, just absolutely deadly in transition. They generate, I think, more transition shots than anyone in the league. And I think the Chrome defense has been pretty vulnerable when it comes to playing transition defense. Their efficiency playing transition defense hasn't been great. If they play settled 6-on-6, they're awesome. You know, I like Manley in his matchup. I like JT Giles Harris in his matchup. I think they're a good match. So I think, you know, I like Chrome's chances to maybe try and slow this game down a little bit, maybe hit some twos against Kincannon. And I would even think about going on the Chrome money line if you really want to get nuts. I think you can get the Chrome money line at +110 or something. There's some good money to be had there. So I will be on the Chrome. And what was the number? It's 23.5.
23.5.
I will take the over on that.
I like it. Well, shout out Chris Rosie's article for the short stick defensive midfielders appreciation. This is a great game for that. I think Peter Dirth, since he really didn't play first handful of weeks in his rookie season and then has since come on to play an integral role for Rubior and company with the Atlas. And we all know how good Chrome has been to slow to slide and their defensive scheme with Ryan Tarasenko and Will Hawes, and now Messenger, put Messenger in the fold, and that intimidating monster being that he is, it's a pretty crazy force that they got together there. All that to say, and you bring up a point with you like the Atlas or the Chrome attack against the Atlas defense, and you know the Atlas defense hasn't been their problem in the past few weeks. It's been their offense. So I think Atlas defense holds strong. I think Baptiste, like you said, Matt, wins his matchup, and I'm going Atlas spread and covering the over as well.
All right, we'll keep it rolling with Cannons Chaos. Chaos are favored, 1.5-point spread, 23.5 over under. I don't know. This is the one that I don't really know. Like, just to the point earlier about my...
The appropriate answer.
What's that?
That's the only appropriate answer. Like, which Chaos guy shows up?
But, well, mine is more it's the Cannons in the sense that I still don't... Like I said earlier, I don't know if they're good or bad. They're the team that I'm most, like, questioning their... where they are in terms of the hierarchy of the league more than any other team now.
They look good for 3.5 quarters.
I think 3.5 quarters, yeah. I think Chaos, there's got to be a tipping point for them. So I'll go with it being this week. You know, it's the week that they kind of start to show us that they are the Chaos that have made the late season run and push to be a playoff team, and then once they get in the playoffs, make some noise. My hesitancy is, like, is it this week or is it going to be after the All-Star break that they kind of really, like, fully recover from a brutal NLL season and, you know, really click to a full extent? But I'll go with it being this week. So I'll go with them, and I'm going to go the under. I just don't, you know, I don't, like you said this earlier, Dan, I don't love the Cannons defense. I don't love either defense either, but I don't really love either offense besides the fact that they have Lyle Thompson for the Cannons. I'm going to go the under. I think it might just be a sloppy, kind of not very fun game to watch. And but I think the Chaos kind of start making their incremental push to the top half of the league this week.
This one, we got kind of get like assigned games, and I was not thrilled to see my name next to this one because, like, you know, you go to try and break these games down every week, and you go start looking, you know, I start looking through the stats, start looking for things where I think there's maybe a weakness that somebody can attack. But whenever you look at like what the Chaos offense does, you have to be like, oh yeah, these numbers are pretty much driven by guys who aren't on the team anymore or aren't like playing anymore. So what do they really mean? How much am I really going to have to kind of go by gut or go by what I saw a little bit of last week or go by just last year's numbers, I guess. So
it's all gut.
Yeah. Which is a tough place to be. Even with a gut like mine, that's a tough place to be. So, you know, for me, I'm on the Cannons in this. I feel like the Cannons plus 1.5, you know, I feel like you could make a case they should be favored in this game, given that the Chaos are winless. I know, I think this is kind of like the result of people expecting that the Bandits players are going to have the rust off and they'll be, you know, back in their game this week. But, you know, I looked at that Chaos game last week, and you mentioned the Chaos defense and not loving them. I thought it was almost like a head-scratcher, but the Chaos defense was getting shredded in two-man games last week. Like, the Water Dogs were running two-man games and at times scoring goals, like, off one pass out of them that looked, like, borderline easy. And it always was it was funny to me because I was like, shouldn't this Chaos defense see these kind of plays in practice or, like, in their warm-up to the game, like, all the time? Shouldn't this be something they see a lot of? But they didn't play them very well, and you know, I think you look at how good the Cannons have been at initiating out of two-man games. I think you're looking at maybe the best two-man combo in the league with Lyle and Asher, and just how hard they are to match up with. They've run that so well already. You know, I kind of like the way that offense works against what the Chaos defense doesn't do that well. You know, Newman covers great. Rowlett covers great. They're physical. But if you turn them into help defenders or guys who have to rotate or have to do a lot more work off ball, they don't do that as well. And the Water Dogs did that really well. And I think, you know, if you use Lyle and Asher correctly, I think you can force them to do that again. And I don't think they can cover like shooters like Drenner or Shane Jackson or even, you know, Jake Vaccaro from distance. I think that's a place where the Cannons can have success. So I'm on the Cannons plus the 1.5, but I'm also on the under. I think this could be one of those games where the shot selection maybe is just okay. The Chaos shot selection through the year, again, this is with guys who aren't on the team anymore, but hasn't been great. Their run-out rate is like super low. And if you throw trash at Morocco, he's going to save it. The same way on the other end, if you throw bad shots at Blaze, he's going to save them. So I think the goalies can keep the total low in this, and I'm going to be on the Cannons plus the 1.5 and the under.
But you also throw in the most Chaos player to really ever to exist in this draft class, who they picked 16th overall, and Jonathan Donville, and he's with the Cannons now, and that's a great pick. And to your point with how well they play the two-man game, I think he fits right in with that, and in terms of coming off, slipping, and rolling off while screens on the high righty wing. But I'm also going to side with you with Cannons covering. I think Lyle breaks whatever the PLL single game points record is. And even though Blaze is in net and he hasn't had the greatest start to this season, so he's probably ready to pick that up. But, you know, Lyle's not ready to see how last game ended, and he's ready to, you know, pick it up. So I'm going Cannons by a mile and over by 100 miles.
Wow. No love for my pick there, but it's all right. The Whip Snakes, Water Dogs, again, 1.5 points. Whip Snakes are favored. We talked about this was an overtime game before. To Dan, your point earlier, like, is this just what the Whipsnakes do? Like, do they beat these caliber of teams by one goal? And is that, like, what we should expect from now on? On paper, I like the Whips by three or four. In reality, one sounds pretty appealing because that's just how they do it. I'm going to go with them, though. I'll go with the Whipsnakes, and it's over 24.5. I'll go the under on that.
You're going for them to cover too, the 1.5.
So yeah, one by two. I'm going the Whips to cover. Yeah.
Noted.
I'm going to be on the Water Dogs in this. I think. I think I just like if it's 1.5. I'm just going to take the 1.5 against the Whipsnakes basically every week until they start regularly winning by more than one goal.
How many they should?
Yeah, like they're 1-3 against the spread. Like, they don't cover ever. So I'm going to keep saying they are a 1-3 team against the spread, and I'm going to take the points. I like the Water Dogs here. I think, you know, I think you'll get a sense for how this one goes early when you can see how much success Tucci gets to have against Nardella. I think if Nardella really, really tilts the field, then it could be a problem. You know, as a player prop this week, I took the under on Michael Sauer's points at 3.5. Partially for that reason, I think Nardella could tilt the field a little bit. And I think Matt Dunn can win that matchup with Sauer's. I think, you know, the book on Sauer's at this point now has been like, just how durable can he really be? Can he make it through a PLL season without really being hurt? And I think if you're a defender, I think your book on him is all right. Let me play him physical. Let me try and rough him up. Let me see if I can make him uncomfortable. Obviously you're not trying to hurt anybody, but you know, if you know a guy, if a lot of contact is going to take him out of his game, or is going to make him a little more uncomfortable, and that's the way you want to play him. Easier said than done, of course, with Sauer's, because just putting your hands on him is not easy. He's, you know, pretty shifty, pretty agile, pretty quick, so a tall order. But I think Dunn can win that matchup, and I think the Water Dogs will have to look elsewhere for points. I think Connor Kelly's trending upwards at a remarkable rate. His point total's gone up every week this year. From week to week, it's gotten better. Last week he had six. He had two 2-pointers. So, you know, I like him to have another solid performance this week. But, you know, I like the Water Dogs plus the 1.5. But I will take the under in this one. I think Dylan Ward maybe goes back. I don't know if he's still going to be hungover from the Mammoth Parade or not. I saw him out there with the Avs today having a blast. And I know their game is until Saturday night, but I don't know what kind of party Dylan's trying to have. So, but if he's out there, then I will take that game to go under.
See, every week you say like they're 1-3 against the spread. It's just, I'm just thinking like, oh, well, they're due for it now.
Which is why I'm going Whipsnakes to cover, because of Dylan Ward's teammate, Zed Williams. I don't think parties nearly as hard as the Canadian netminder. And I think he goes off. He had a nice little behind the back pass to Jay to mark his season debut, but he really was kind of, you know, figuring out the nooks and crannies of the field game after a long NLL season, and I think he puts it all together in a big performance against the Water Dogs, even though it'll be interesting to see who they match up with. I'll have to go back to the last season's tape with who out of Burns, Gobrecht, and Randall is obviously on Rambo, but I think what that leaves Burns on Carlson and Gobrecht on Zed, that's tough matchups, you know. And then I think the whole of the offense is going to start to click a lot more. I'm going to predict that Kirst breaks out of his shell and maybe gets a 2-pointer. Brian Cole, I think, gets some more invert opportunities, and maybe Channy plays more like week 3 Long Island Channy than week 4 Baltimore Channy, and we go 3 straight weeks with an Erhart 2-parter, then might as well just bag it and give it to the Whipsnakes right away.
Very nice. So, Dan, what can people read from you, see you on your Twitter, however you want people to interact with you? What's the best thing people can do with you this weekend?
You can find me on Twitter. That's usually where I'm doing most of my damage, at Dan Arestia, DanArestia. See me there. You can read my gambling content. If I get all of these right, please go read it. It's at PicksWise. If I don't get any right, please go read it. It's at PicksWise. And then I do a weekly piece for Lacrosse Flash, which I think might be a competitor of yours. I don't know. But if you want to edit that out, be my guest. I do a weekly takeaways piece for them where I just kind of look at the things that I saw over the weekend that stood out to me as storylines or things in the course of the season. And you can look for that early every week, Monday, Tuesday, every week.
There's no competitors in the happy hour. It's a safe place.
All right. All right. Hey, I got one for you. One more before we go. Ready for this? Championship series, top four teams in the league right now. Who are you taking? Who are your four that make it?
Oh, boy. I'm going. So
there's two easy ones, and then there's maybe two of the not-so-easy ones.
I had Redwoods in their preseason, as you were quick to comment on Twitter that I didn't have Archers in there. So I'm going to go with Redwood. I'm going to go with Whipstakes. I'm going to go with Chrome. I'm going to go with Atlas. I'm going to shake it up. Still keep Archers out. I'm going to go with Water Dogs.
Wow. I think that's the four that I had in preseason.
Yeah.
You had Chrome in there in the preseason? Yeah. Wow. Good for you.
But I also was anti-Archers. I think I was anti-Archers at that point. But I'm not sure if it was Water Dog. I might have had Cannons in there. It was after week one that we did this.
Okay.
So I can't take full credit for being like a soothsayer here. Chrome Whip Snakes. Atlas. I don't feel good about that. But I feel good about it because of Trevor and Jeff Teat. Like, there's just too much talent for them to not
be in the top half, right? Like they kind of have to be.
Like, and then,
that fourth spot is a race right now.
I'm gonna go with Water Dogs because the Grand Ament status being the deciding factor. And you know, when we did this exercise before, Matt Moore, you know, we spent 10 minutes talking about how awesome Matt Moore is. So that's given me a little bit of pause there because, you know, I think that he has mitigated some of the loss of what Ament does because of just his talent coming out of the box. But I think I'm going to go with the Dogs.
Yeah, I think it's a fun question right now. Like, I'm a little surprised neither one of you said the Chaos, because I think you can reasonably make a case that the Chaos do their Chaos thing and finish in the top four of the league.
Well, I had this very big caveat when we did this before, that I think the Chaos are going to be one of the last four teams standing, for sure, but okay, they won't be in the top four of the regular season standings.
That's a good call. I like that. I think you have to take the Whips right now. I think you kind of have to take the Chrome. I'm with you where, like, I don't know if it's all that safe to say the Atlas are going to be in there. I think the Ament thing is taking my Archer's pick and probably knocking them out. But I like the Water Dogs to be in there, too. Yeah. It's so hard. I'm on here talking about how Baptiste is the MVP. How could I possibly leave them out of the top four? So I think that's my top four too, but I think you could see the Archers in there. I think you could see the Redwoods in there. I think the Chaos could do their Chaos thing and be in there. I think that fourth spot, that third, fourth spot, I think is still like extremely a wide open race.
Just all of us are just like, no chance the Cannons made the top four.
I mean, I started the show by picking the Cannons to finish last, so I can't sit here and put them in the top four now.
Yeah, and I'd have to go back and re-listen, but I think I might have said the Cannons, and I'm not sure if I said the Water Dogs in there or the Cannons in there in that top four. But I definitely recall Like, I think the Chaos are going to be potentially a semifinal. You know, they're going to be a semifinal team or potentially a finalist, but they're not going to be in this contention for the player series, which I'm very eager to figure out the championship series. I'm very eager to figure out what the details are on that. You know, I think we know it's supposed to be a warm weather kind of destination type city that this is going to be held at. We obviously know the rules are going to be the Sixes rules, and it's going to be smaller rosters and all of that stuff. But I think it's actually a really, really cool idea that they're doing.
I think it's everybody who's out there clamoring, oh, they need some kind of way to develop talent. You need to find some way to show off the guys who are in the player pool or the undrafted guys who are trying to win a spot. I think this is the event for that player. I think you'll have a ton of guys, since it conflicts with indoor, who will go play indoor. You'll have like entire rosters in the case of like the Chaos, where if they do make it, like, it'll be player pool kind of guys for them. A lot of teams will be like that, but I think it'll be a case where you get a lot of those guys a chance to show off and impress a coach and make a roster come summertime. So from that point of view, I think it's awesome. I love them finding a way to both do the Sixes thing and get those guys in there who are, you know, if you don't have your superstars, I don't think it's necessarily a huge deal. I think you're going to get, you know, some of those guys who are looking to earn a spot. I think that's really compelling stuff.
And even if you are a superstar, there's not enough opportunities to see these guys play.
Yeah.
As it is already. So even if it is like superstar heavy, like, you're still seeing these guys play, and these guys are getting a paycheck that they weren't otherwise getting in a sport where being a full-timer is still a very difficult proposition. It's still a really cool thing in that regard. So awesome. Well, Minnesota this weekend, and then we're gonna have a little bit of break, and then we'll have an All-Star game. And then we're kind of in the home stretch.
And you're coming to my neck of the woods. See y'all in Connecticut.
So are you going to be there?
Yes, I will. They called my wife trying to sell her tickets today for the second time.
A second time?
Stop calling my wife, PLL.
Oh man, I've never gotten the call. Well,
they called her for Long Island, and then they called her again for Connecticut. Andrew, I'm putting you on blast. Stop calling my wife, Andrew.
I get spam calls that they very well may have called, and I just have ignored it all these times. But that's hilarious. They like, what's her response? What is her response? Like, how much does she entertain it? Does she like? Because she should just keep them on the phone for as long as
she,
possible.
She chats a little bit. She chats a little bit and then explains that I spend some time like writing about the league and that I already have tickets, so we should be all set. She said that to Andrew today. And I think Andrew said to don't hesitate to give him my number and have him call me if he has any questions. I was like, I'll be sure to call. I'll let you know if I have any questions.
Just call and ask.
I'll be in touch. And you know what, Andrew? Here's my number. You call me if you have any questions too. I'm happy to help you out.
That's great.
Well, that's awesome. And then, I mean, there's some awesome sites left on this. You know, it's definitely a West Coast swing toward this, you know, kind of the, I don't know, middle part of the season, so to speak, with after Fairfield, it's Dallas, it's Denver, it's Salt Lake City, and then it's Seattle before we get back into Boston for the quarterfinals, and then semifinals. And Kevin, the two cities that you have most called home, between DC and Philadelphia.
Yes, sir.
And then before we know it, we'll be into fall ball and back on the college train. So awesome. Well, Dan, thanks for joining us. You know, we're pumped about it. And thanks, everyone, for listening to PLL Happy Hour.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.